What's going on, everybody, and welcome inside the Browns Beat. I'm Michael Keefe. He is Fred Greetham, and we've got a great show for you as the off-season programs roll along. OTA's done. Mandatory minicamp is almost over, and it's about time for all of us Browns fans to kind of hibernate before training camp, and maybe everybody can get a rest, including Fred Greetham. And our special guest coming up, we've got a great show planned for you as rejoining the show. We've got Ashley Bastock coming in, so we'll bring her in just a minute. But first, this is our time to remind you that we are brought to you here on the OBR Streaming Network. The Orange and Brown Report is Cleveland's oldest and largest independent Browns coverage site. So if you are not already a member, if you are not already signed up and subscribed, get over to the OBR.com, hit subscribe, and you can be a part of that community where you can read all the good stuff from our whole OBR crew. You can be part of the communities and the message boards, and then you hang out with us, whether it's YouTube, Twitch, wherever you watch us on social media, hit that follow button and subscribe there as well. And we appreciate you guys for jumping in. Fred Greetham, mandatory minicamp, man. You're in it right now. You're in it. How you feeling, man?
This is kicking me, you know. This doesn't feel like mini camp when it's 92 degrees and 100 heat index. And usually this type of mini camp is a little more laid back in the spring. It's like, man, I feel like we are in the middle of training camp. It is like crazy. There's so much happening. Usually nothing's happening, you know, or guys getting traded, you know, doing this competition at quarterbacks, all kinds of stuff. But yeah, just got home. Todd Monken's kind of old school. He goes long. He goes hard. And it might be what the Browns need, but, man, it's tough on the media. We don't talk to anybody till the end of the day. We're dragging, man.
Doesn't Todd know how long you've been doing this, Fred? Like, you need a break. Hey,
he didn't talk to us today. He lost his voice at practice. He couldn't talk. Sorry.
Real convenient excuse. Real convenient out of Monken.
Tomorrow morning, we're supposed to hear from the last time before training camp. He said, if his voice comes back, everybody's saying, we got cough drops. Come on, man.
Just finding that immediately head coach energy out of Todd Monken. Right away, finding the excuse to not talk to anybody. I love it. Love it. All right, Fred. Well, again, we got a lot we're going to get into because we're about to enter into – well, actually, with the Browns, I guess you never know. But it feels like we're about to enter into just a period of darkness. But got a lot to talk about now as we're in mandatory minicamp, and we're going to do it with a friend of the show, somebody we had on during the season. We had a great time with her talking about the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, Fred, we talk about dedication a little bit. We talk about those late days. You're home. You made it home. I see every time we have people on from Cleveland.com, they're always just at the Browns facility. Didn't we just have Dan Lobby on just a couple weeks ago, and he was at the facility? I can see in the background right now, our special guest is still at the facility, staying locked in and dedicated in Berea there. We're going to bring her in now again from Cleveland.com, and she does the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Let's get her in here right now. It's Ashley Bastock. Ashley, welcome back inside the Browns Beat.
Thank you for having me. You are right. I am still here. It is a running joke. We did little media superlatives last season, and I believe the ones like last ones to leave the press box, but it extends to the facility, was awarded to our whole Cleveland.com crew, and we're all still here right now.
You know, I shouldn't have made the assumption about you. And maybe your house is decorated like that.
I know. I just have this giant Brown sign in my living room. Actually, I can't escape work. I don't want to escape work. So, yeah, I live here. My room looks suspiciously like the Browns in-house TV studio.
I'm telling you, you know, you guys are dedicated. It's like I feel like it's the middle of training camp, you know. Yeah. And it's only been 2 days. I think it's the 91, 92 degrees, high humidity, and just the way it seems like everything happens at once. It's after practice. We hear from Deshaun Watson. We hear from Shedeur Sanders. Hear from Isaiah Bond. Everybody at once. And then it's kind of like, how do you digest all this stuff? So, I mean, how you hanging with it?
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to your intro, Fred, and that's like, exactly how I feel. It does feel like training camp. And I do think, you know, when Kevin Stefanski was here, it's crazy to be on the Browns beat. This is my sixth season. And this is my first coaching change. I had Kevin Stefanski for my entire time on the beat prior. And those Stefanski spring practices were a cool, quick, efficient 90 minutes. Like, they were working, but it was sort of in and out. Like, you were not out there for over 2 hours on days like this. And I do think they actually cut practice a little short today, the final 2 minute period. They also did at a walkthrough pace. So I do wonder how much the heat even played a factor in that. But it definitely, I think Browns fans, and I've said this from the minute Todd Monken got hired, I think Browns fans are, a lot of them are going to resonate with that more old school sort of tougher style. Like, it just feels more Cleveland to me. But I mean, to your point, I'm sitting here today on Wednesday at 7:08 being like, how am I going to get through training camp? We got to do this like maybe 3 or 4 days in a row.
I just wrote it down. You know, you said Todd Monken cut practice short. I wrote this down. Where I wonder who's going to have the headline tomorrow. Is Todd Monken too soft on these guys? Is he too soft? Cutting practice short?
Yeah, and it sounds like tomorrow's set to be a bit of a shorter practice anyway, maybe only like an hour and a half, I believe, under 2 hours. So, yeah, maybe people will start that narrative. But I'd urge you not to, because I don't want the training camp practices to go on even further.
Yeah, I mean, if we have anything from the OTAs in the spring, I think it's going to be long, tough, arduous practices, probably, you know, be welcomed by the fans, but as far as media, not so much. I mean, Kevin was kind of, you know, a little quicker, and, you know, and the players, I know they liked him. They got a lot of days off, the veterans and so forth. You know, the one thing that struck me, and I don't know if you remember, Ashley, how many players that are there that are not practicing at this time of the year. You'd think everybody'd be healthy.
Yeah, I actually have a list in front of me that I can go through today. And I believe it was basically the same list as yesterday, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys, 11 if you count Denzel Ward, who's doing individual stuff but isn't out in the team drills. So what I think has been interesting is the offense for, you know, we talk so much about the quarterback competition and these young receivers, especially how good they look, but they haven't had to go against this defense at its best yet. I mean, Jared Verse just got here. He's in team drills this week, to his credit. I mean, good for him, because he just rolled up in Cleveland last week. But no Grant Delpit, no Denzel Ward. That secondary is kind of like a shell of itself in these drills. And I think, too, that's kind of like, I perk up a little bit when there's a takeaway in these practices, because it's not even your best guys getting them most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, and there are a lot of defensive backs, as you mentioned, a couple of them. I mean, there's second, third, you know, and Emmanuel McNeil Warren, you know, he hasn't practiced in a while. And of course, you know, the coach isn't going to talk about injuries. So you're like, what are they doing? And then on the other hand, when I first saw Quinshon Judkins out there, when we had that indoor practice running full go, I thought to myself, if this was Kevin Stepanski, we might not see him till the first game. And yet he looks really good, but he's doing everything.
Yeah, the Quinshon thing was interesting, because we went out there for the voluntary mini camp the Tuesday of draft week, and Quinshon was there, but he was just on the sidelines. Like, he wasn't dressed. He was just watching. So when we went to that indoor practice less than a month later, and we go out there and it's like, okay, he's practicing, that's good. But then when we saw him in the first team drill, it was like, whoa. Like, I looked back, you know, his original timetable was 4 to 5 months. And that was like exactly what it was from his surgery in December. It was 5 months, almost like to the day from when I looked it up yesterday. But it was still surprising. And I do think it's because we just wouldn't see that sort of stuff with the last regime. I think they were more likely to be cautious in terms of injuries. And I actually think, not to relitigate the whole 2024 season, but like, I always felt like that was a big part of the 2024 season being a disaster, and how just awful they looked against the Cowboys in week one that year was because so many guys were sitting out with injuries. But I'm like, if Todd Monken was the head coach back then, how many of them would have practiced? I think probably a handful more at least.
Well, so let's put a bow on something, and obviously we haven't talked with you about it, Ashley, but I know people are interested. They've talked about it for the last 9 days. The Myles Garrett trade, obviously, we've gone through the return and Jared Verse and the picks, and it's not really about that, but I do think a thing that people are very interested in hearing is just the vibe around the building. I think people are really – you can't help it when you're a fan or whatever. You can't help but jump to conclusions on things. So people are trying to dig into who said what online and who didn't say things online and what does it all mean? And, and I think it's all just a bunch of nonsense, to be honest. But you guys are there. You're at the facility. Now we're 9 days without Myles Garrett, two-time defensive player of the year and a guy that this team was really built around since 2017. And so just – give us a real indication of kind of the vibe around the building, the vibe with the players, the coaches, with Jared Verse, and just kind of what you're feeling around there after the trade now that we're almost 2 weeks in.
Yeah, I mean, I think the vibe with the defense overall is that, hey, we're bigger than one person was. Now, everyone knows how great Myles Garrett is, but every defender we talk to, like, these guys still want to show, hey, we are – one of the best or the best in their eyes cohesive unit in the league. And I think a big part of what is helping them with that thinking and that talking point is the trade itself and the fact that they got Jared Verse back in this deal. So it's a young guy at a premium position, to use the language Andrew Berry always uses, and under cost control. He's going to be here for a while. And I think that is leading the sentiment of, oh, like, they're not just tanking our season away by trading away Myles Garrett. And, like, most of the time, under most circumstances, I think that would be the prevailing sentiment. But I think getting Jared Verse back in that deal is why it's not. And, you know, as of right now, I hear fans say they said they weren't trading Miles over and over again, and then they did. Like, how do we know they won't trade Denzel Ward or Grant Delpit or whoever else on the defense? And, I mean, my answer to that is, like, you really don't know, and that is kind of what makes the Miles trade interesting is – and I believe Andrew Berry, like, when he described it as they weren't planning on doing this, they weren't shopping Miles around. Like, I do believe this was a one-of-one deal with the Rams, and I think that had they not come calling, then – they're not just going to deal Miles away to deal him away. So all of that, I think it makes it harder, though, to say, oh, yeah, they're for sure not trading another one of these vets, because if the right deal comes along, I would think, like, anyone is potentially on the table after you trade Myles Garrett. But I think they overall are just like, yeah, we are still a good defense. Like, we now have the last two NFL defensive rookies of the year in our locker room. And I mean, I know there's been so much talk about people, well, why aren't more guys posting Miles? Like, I do think a reality is, like, Myles Garrett was, this has been talked about and covered, like, extensively. I'm not, like, breaking news here, but he was not, like, the most vocal leader, right? And I think it's, like, actually good for him in LA. Like, he's not going to have to, like, do that sort of thing because you're going with Sean McVay and Matt Stafford. And, you know, I mean, Alex Wright talked at length, like, for people to say, like, no one's talking about missing him. Alex Wright talked at length. He's the only other D lineman we've gotten to talk to after the trade about how he couldn't believe it. He thought it was a fake account when he saw it. Like, Miles was his vet. He was going to miss him. And I'm sure we'll get more of that. But, you know, Denzel Ward, I think at the softball game last weekend, his annual charity softball game, when he's like, if you're not with us, you're against us. Like, these guys, I think, are locked in as a group more than anything after this trade.
I think I'll put in my two cents. I get the same sense with the defensive guys that there's a little chip on the shoulder that, you know, Miles had such an aura of himself, and it was always kind of the defense, you know, obviously under Jim Schwartz, but it always started and ended with Myles Garrett, and the other 10 guys maybe were a little lost in the shuffle. And mm-hmm. I think they have a little motivation. And then you can add in Mike Rutenberg, the defensive coordinator, who's in the shadow of Jim Schwartz. All of those guys want to show that we're more, the sum of our parts is greater than the whole. And the one thing about Jared Verse is – what I have been impressed with, the guy has jumped right in, put his head down. He's already out there with the first team, you know, and he could have taken some time, you know, But he jumped right out into the OTAs and right into, you know, with the guys. And instead, the first day he was here, obviously every video was of him. Now he's just kind of blending in again, you know, and I think that's a credit to him. He said the right things, and he's not making a spectacle, you know, not that Miles did, yeah. But it's just like he was a focal point all the time.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, I think it's almost like Jared Burse is going to be more of a peer in that room. And Miles, and I think, look, I obviously think Miles Garrett is an incredible player, obviously. There's no comp for him. Jared Burse does not completely replace what Miles Garrett did for you. But Miles Garrett was also operating under a different set of rules. And, you know, he didn't come to anything that was voluntary here. And then Browns fans have to go and see him at the first OTA he can attend with the Rams, right? So I think when you have a young defense and a young team, when you have one player who is sort of operating on their own plane, it to me is maybe not the best thing. Like, I think, and Todd Monken, you know, was always never wanted to make a big deal about guys not being here, whatever, said all the right things about it being voluntary. But I mean, I think it's a very big deal that Jared Burse is here and in it. And Todd Monken loves these guys that love football. And I think it's a big deal. Carson Schlesinger came to everything this year. Like, to me, that's where I think Carson Schlesinger is going to be huge. Obviously, we know Denzel Ward, but I just think it helps that for young defense, oh, we have this peer, not somebody who is going to be operating under this different set of rules that the Browns gave Miles Garrett.
Yeah, today the big – go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Fred.
I was going to say the big story, you know, we heard from Deshaun Watson for the first time in almost 2 years. Since he got hurt against the Bengals on October 20th, he'd kind of went into an abyss, you know, of his rehab and so forth. In that time, Jimmy Haslam said we took a big swing and a miss. Well, we talked with Deshaun. He hadn't spoken all offseason until today. I want to get your reaction to that. It was just a couple hours ago, how you thought he'd come off and some of the things he said and how he addressed some of the situation.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was the best press conference that Deshaun Watson has given since he's been here. I mean, I think that's for many reasons, right? This is the first time, as you said, Brett, we haven't talked to him in so long. It's been 20 months. It was October 16th, 2024, before that Bengals game, the last time we heard from him. So this is the first time we've talked to him where everything with his off-the-field allegations, in particular the civil lawsuits, is settled now. Like, all of that is no more. So we're not in the position to be asking him about that off the field stuff like we were basically every other time he spoke to us from the time they traded for him in 2022 onward. So I think that stuff is no longer hanging over his head the way it was. And I mean, he talked about it today, and I think this idea that he was never fully healthy, he said, from week three of 2023 on until now. And now he is. So that was something we had speculated about. And folks may not remember the back and forth with the shoulder injury. I think, like, that got dwarfed by a lot of what happened with his Achilles injuries. And that's a whole other thing. But the shoulder injury, it was a rotator cuff injury in 2023 against the Titans that he suffered. And then when we talk to, you know, obviously he goes through, he's playing, we go through those weeks of every single week. It is the guy playing? Is he not? We're waiting. Dorian Thompson Robinson is being told 90 minutes before kickoff against the Ravens in week four that he's starting, starting PJ Walker. We're doing all this stuff, right? And then after what was his best half of football against the Baltimore Ravens that you're in Baltimore, you know, we know he's playing on a high ankle sprain, and they come back and say, oh, it's this fractured glenoid bone in his shoulder. And everyone's like, where did that come from? And they're like, it happened in the Ravens game, we think. And then we get to the 2024 offseason, and Deshaun Watson in an offseason press conference mentions that his surgeon, Dr. Elitrosh, said that it could have happened as far back as week three against the Titans. So there was always kind of this speculation about the shoulder and the impact that was having. And then we get to the Greenbrier in 2024, and we're watching him do that net drill, and he can't hit the net. And then we never watch him do it again. And then you're watching him in these games, and he just looks so unsure of himself, right? Like he's not trusting what he's seeing out there and he's not trusting his arm to deliver. So I think the shoulder, like take the two Achilles tears away. The shoulder alone was such like a mind bending thing for him, I felt. And I feel like he doesn't have that anymore. Like he's far enough removed from that injury that it's not impacting him in the same way. And, you know, he says the Achilles stuff feels great. We watch him move. The real test is going to come when there's pads on and you're getting hit. And I think for me, for the most part, Deshaun Watson has always looked good in practice, but like it's going to come now in the games. But I think you just, you feel that sort of stress from that particular injury lifted off of him. And I feel like I really got that sentiment today.
I appreciate the transition, Fred, because it's right where I was going. I was going to say, how dare the Browns and Myles Garrett distract us from what we should be talking about right now, because it's the only thing we talk about in Cleveland Browns world, and that's quarterback. So I appreciate that transition, Fred. That was good stuff. It does start to feel to me, though, a little bit, Ashley and Fred, and this is maybe just more opinion-based, but there's that famous saying, because we've heard Todd Monken say it, we've got two starting quarterbacks. Some are Dylan Gabriel over there, like, but he said we got two starting quarterbacks, and the famous saying is if you have two starting quarterbacks, you don't have one. And so then in my head, I'm sitting here going, listen, I can understand if Deshaun Watson with this new coaching staff, I'm not going to like it. And I know Deshaun was asked about that today, and I actually thought his answer was okay. If he really separates himself in this process and with the new coaching staff, and it's more than just practice warrior kind of stuff, he really separates from the pack and they're like, we're going to go with him. Then all right. Like, listen, what are you going to do? But if it's this the whole time, if it's, man, Shadur looks pretty good and Deshaun looks pretty good and they're pretty, Shadur's taking 50% or he's getting the reps with the ones yesterday and now Deshaun's getting them today and all that, then to me, this is not a difficult situation. If that's the case, you have to roll with the kid that you don't really know anything about yet and see if he's grown into year two and see if you can roll with him moving forward, right? Like, if it's 50-50 neck and neck, then it has to, you got to go all in on the young kid, the second year player, right?
It's a good argument. And Mike, like, I got to be honest, I've been thinking about that old football adage for 2 weeks, like since Todd Monken said it. Like, you can't say you have two quarterbacks when everyone knows the same. If you have two, you have none. Like, to me, there is some concern that you're Deshaun Watson and you're the veteran and you haven't closed this out yet. And like, fully credit to Shedeur Sanders for keeping this thing interesting and staying in the fight, because I think if he were, you know, mentally weaker or a worse player than what he was, he could have rolled over by now and said, whatever, I'm just going to be the backup. And he hasn't. But I do think, like, to your point, that is sort of the argument to make for Shedeur Sanders, is if he can keep it this close and it is neck and neck, why wouldn't you go with the rookie that you found in the fifth round if the veteran can't differentiate himself? But that is the interesting part in all of this, is when we get to training camp, is Deshaun Watson going to be able to stack days here and show off that veteran prowess a bit more, show that he's played in systems like this before, because he's the one with the experience running a Todd Monken style offense. I mean, these guys going back to Air Raid and all that stuff, like they have so many overlapping understandings of, I think, what this offense is going to look like. So that part of it to me is interesting, like Deshaun Watson not managing to close this thing out. But it's like, okay, how much of that is something Deshaun is doing versus something Shedeur is doing? And I think that's also a big part of this.
Yeah, it's, you know, first thing on the interview, I do agree with you. He was much more relaxed today. He was much more poised. He seems at peace. He said he's in a better place. He just all the way around, I just felt like he was a kind of a different person. And from that aspect, that 2 years away might have been the best thing for him, like a reset personally, and to get that shoulder right. He's been making pretty good throws, you know, in camp, and it doesn't seem to be bothering him. And And but then there's all types of ways you can look at this too. You can say, why in the world was he ahead at the beginning, but then now it's close enough where you can't make a decision between the two? Was that to motivate Shadur? Was that to have Deshaun feel like he had the chance? We're going to go with Shadur all the way, like you've been arguing. You know, it's because I agree. If he does not separate himself, a 10-year veteran that played in this offense when he had his best year in the NFL back in Houston, he ought to look way ahead of Shadur. That's what I expected all along. And now to see that they've closed the gap where, you know, my jaw almost dropped when Todd said a week or two, he goes, I go back and forth every day. Well, you know, and you're like, really? It's that close? Well, then I agree. Why would you go with a guy in the last year of his contract who, if he's on the field, you know, and I know everybody's going to boo him. Not that this is the thing, or not boo, but necessarily be calling for Shadur, you know,
that first or second play. That first dirt ball is going to be gross in that stadium. So it's going to be gross.
It's just, I do think that's part of the thing. Wait till you get to training camp now, put the pads on, even having them go out against the Bills, and maybe you can say, okay, definitely this guy's ahead and he's ready to do it. So it's just been, it's going to be continue to be the talk of everything.
Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of why I thought, like, for this team and obviously everything that's gone on, if you could name a starter like tomorrow, like hypothetically in a perfect world, I think you would name the starter tomorrow, because as we know, like, the dead period's coming up and everyone just kind of gets to sit with that decision. Like, you'll talk about it, but it's not going to be the same story it will be as, like, if you announce that guy after the joint practices with the Bills, which I do suddenly, like, I agree with Fred. I think that's suddenly become a really important date in all of this, if it's as close as they're telling us it is, which, I mean, it sounds like it is. I have no choice but to believe them, right? And, I mean, it's not just them telling us that. It's that we're seeing the things. Like, we're seeing Shadur get all the reps with the ones yesterday. Then Deshaun gets them today. Tomorrow, it sounds like it's going to be a shorter practice. But I imagine there will be some flip-flopping and mixing and matching going on. So I think, like, it's not ideal to not know who that guy is. And I mean, Todd Monken himself said that at the combine when we first started asking him about it, that ideally you would like to know who the starter is before you start training camp. But I just don't think it's the reality right now here.
All right, Ashley, before we let you go back to your favorite place there in Berea, we've got just a couple quick hitter things before we let you out of here. And we've got a couple things from the comments. And listen, I'm sorry. Every time I put a comment up, it like covers half the box, and I don't know how to fix that. So I'm going to throw it up and then try to get rid of it, because this was kind of something that I had. This is like a three-part question, but I'm going to boil it all down to a question that I had from our buddy chat underscore username in the comments. Now I'm going to put it away. But it's a lot of questions about maybe some stuff that were – everybody's talking about the defensive end, Jared Verse, the Garrett trade, the quarterbacks. But when you're out there watching – and Fred, this is for you too – but when you're out there watching, what groups outside of quarterback, what groups are you still kind of concerned about? And what groups, what people are out there practicing that you're going, wow, there is something there to these guys. They're really excelling. And as you now are watching the coaching staff, you know, what's your confidence level that these guys are going to kind of get things right with this group?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll start with the guys who are really excelling. I think this is an obvious answer for fans who have paid attention on social media, but Denzel Boston. And I mean, I think for me, it's just the guy catches everything. Like, his catch radius is so impressive. He's big. I mean, I know I like wondered, I'm like, are they going to want him to add some muscle to his frame? And I mean, it sounds like maybe they're okay with where he is right now, and we'll see how he comes back for training camp. But his catch radius and his ability in contested catches are the thing to me that just continue to stand out. I'm really excited about him. In terms of where I'm questioning, I'll say the running back situation for them is interesting, because I am kind of like, what happens if Quinshon Judkins gets hurt again? And we know Todd Monken likes to run the football. These offenses are very predicated upon that. We just haven't seen a lot of Rocket Sanders, and you know, Dylan Sampson has been missed a bunch of spring time. He's been back this week going full go. But I do worry about his durability a little bit between this offseason and what we saw from him last year. So I'll go with running back there, because I will say defensively, the only position group I was really concerned about with them coming into the spring was safety. And I thought they perfectly addressed that by getting Emmanuel McNeil Warren in the draft. So I think they're set there. And then, you know, the coordinator question is interesting, because like Travis Schweitzer is the offensive coordinator, but Todd Monken is the one calling the plays. So I think for all intents and purposes, we have to think of Todd Monken as our offensive coordinator here. And I think like the good thing about Todd Monken is he's worked with all these different quarterbacks. He knows how to adjust his offenses, like whether it's Shador or Deshaun starting. I think Todd Monken is going to know, okay, here's what we have to change based on the guy. And then Byron Storr, like we don't know a lot about, right? It's his first time being a coordinator by himself. He's been with Rick Bisaccia for his entire career, essentially. So I think what really I'm curious about if he can solve is the return problem. And he's been giving guys a lot of looks at punt return. I mean, I think it should just be Casey Concepcion's job, but maybe that is going to depend on Todd Monken and usage and things like that. And Mike Runenberg is the most interesting one to me, because I just think he's a fascinating personality. I may have something on him this summer that folks can look out for. I'll tease that. But like, he's, to your point, I think Mike, you were the one that said it, like he is stepping into some big shoes. Like Jim Schwartz was so successful here. Guys loved playing for him. And I think Rudy has a bit different of a personality. He's a bit more outwardly fiery, I would say. So I'm really curious to see how it's going to go. But I think he's certainly, at least from what I've seen so far, up to the challenge.
And then, oh, Fred, are you going to, do you have additions?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
I took that yep as like a yes, I agree with everything Ashley just said, and I just rolled with it.
Yep, I think I got all of those questions to that commenter, so I like speed read them, and I think I hit all the points you wanted me to.
You nailed that. And then I thought this was an interesting question. I'm gonna we'll end with this from the chat, but this is more of a media question, and I think it's a good one from our buddy Phil is not a bot in the chat. And again, sorry Ashley, but do Fred and Ashley have a feel for how to ask Coach Monk questions yet? I imagine there's a learning curve with new coaches on how to deliver a question to get a valuable response. And I think that's a really good question for people on Inside the Browns beat here. So what do you guys think?
No, I love the question. I definitely think there is a learning curve. And I mean, I've noticed, and Fred, I hope you will agree with me. I don't think it's like that unobvious what I've noticed with Todd Monken. I think it takes him a few questions to get going. I think you're better off letting him roll like 1 to 2 minutes, 90 seconds to 2 minutes with his initial stuff, maybe asking him some stuff that he doesn't have to be too expansive on early. And then I do find you're able to get a bit more expansive answers as the presser goes on. That's like Kevin, it didn't matter when you asked him something, like he was going to say what he was going to say or not say what he wasn't going to say, regardless of when it got asked.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. You know, he starts out with, I'm not talking about injuries, but then he kind of answers the injury question by then throwing Delp at, you know, I'm not going to talk about injuries. Well, then it's an injury, right?
Yeah.
But no, I do, and I like his, at least so far, he's been forthcoming. He pretty much is, you know, like he said stuff about the quarterback competition that I don't think Kevin would have ever said.
No.
You know, like I go back and forth. That's telling us that Shador and Watson, he can't make a decision between, you know. And then he said we have two starting level quarterback, you know, and things, you know. And so I'm never going to criticize a coach for talking straight, you know, with and I think that is appreciative by the writers and so forth, because when I read through it, I can come up with a story out of things he said where I really couldn't. On Mondays after, you know, we did a Zoom with Kevin on Mondays. My goodness, to try to even put notes together, it was like, okay, this is a challenge and a half. So, Yeah, I think that you do have to learn a little bit because, you know, where he's not going to go and where he might go and how to approach it. That is a technique for sure.
Yeah, I mean, even something like as simple as injuries, like when you ask about a specific guy, you kind of have to change how you ask the question. So he said that about injuries, and then we were able to flip it and be like, okay, but what about Malik Collins? Do you think he'll be ready by training camp? And then that's like what gets the answer of, yeah, he should be. So yeah, there's a learning curve, but I agree with Fred. Like, I think his willingness to say things is a welcome change here. And that's also, I think, from the minute Todd Monken got here, I was like, oh, I think fans are going to love this, because I do think the Kevin Stefanski non-answers got grating to fans by the end. And I do think it was noticed.
Yeah. Well, all you had to do was read our comments.
He was supposed to speak after practice today, but he bowed out because he was hoarse after practice. So I wonder, you know, how often that could happen. If you've heard him talk, it makes my throat hurt sometimes, because he's almost always speaking hoarsely. And so we'll see if we get him tomorrow or not, but that's a good answer right there.
All right, I got one last one before we let you out of here, Ashley. And this is just because you two were both, Fred, you and Ashley, you were both in a pretty cool picture yesterday, as yesterday was the Joel Bitonio retirement announcement and press conference. And I saw the picture that came out that had everybody, all the media members and a lot of the beat writers up on the stage, and you were both in there. But I think this is just a cool moment for the two of you. You've had some chances, you know, we've over these last 27 years of anguish, we've watched so many people come and go, and so many guys that you go, oh yeah, they did play for the Browns that one time. The Dwayne Bowes of the world, if you will. And there's been so many of those, but we've had this collection of guys, whether it be Joe Thomas, and now when we talk about just guys that spent a long time here, Phil Dawson or Josh Cribbs, And a name that gets added to that list is Joel Bitonio, who was just, I said it in our little Slack channel for the OBR. I said, I think maybe the best compliment that I can give Joel Bitonio on field, not off field, because he just seems like a guy I want to have a beer with, to be honest. But on field, the biggest compliment is he's an inside lineman that always made you notice it. Like, you always talked about Joel Bitonio. And there's virtually no inside linemen that do that in the NFL. But Joel Bitonio was one of those guys. He announces his retirement. He goes out as a Cleveland Brown. So just talk about that event yesterday, that moment, the picture, and just covering Joel Bitonio.
Yeah, so the picture, this was actually my first picture I've gotten to be in like this, because when players either do their retirement press conference, or, you know, the handful that I've seen have been guys coming back and doing a retirement press conference, like Joe Hayden or Christian Kirksey. So if you covered that player, you get to be in the picture. So Joel is the first player that I covered on the beat who announced the retirement, did the press conference, did the whole shebang, and like get to be in that picture finally. So it was really cool. I mean, Joel was such a pleasure to cover. I mean, he was so generous with his time with us. He understood what our job was and why it was important for them and him. And yeah, I mean, I can remember talking to Joel about his back being locked up and those sorts of stories where, like, he couldn't even get up the stairs on Tuesday, and then he's playing on Sunday and traveling on Saturday. And sometimes him standing there doing two scrums after a game, including one that I think he like cut short, 'cause he's like, okay, I have to, like, I can't move. Like, I have to go get treatment on my back now. Like, he was in some serious pain. And just always fought through. So just a cool guy. I don't know what we're going to do with him without him in that locker room, I should say.
Pro's pro. You know, he would be on the Rushmore, you know, since 99, obviously. You know, there hasn't been a lot. But, yeah, he's a stand-up guy. We have an award we vote on. It's called the Good Guy Award. And I think he's won it 5 times. I'm going to suggest that they change the award to Joel Bitonio Good Guy Award, because he is the good guy. I mean, he would be the epitome of the stand-up guy when a team's 3-14. that will stand there and talk, you know, and did it win, lose, or draw, and mostly when they lost. And so, yeah, great guy, and, you know, on the as a player, but even a better guy, you know, as a person. Wish him all the best in the world.
A cool moment, and cool to hear you guys talk about a guy you got to cover that actually is not one of those other type of guys, but a real Cleveland Browns legend that, who knows, maybe we'll see some inductions of Joel Bitonio in Cleveland and maybe a little bit down the road in the future. So we'll see how that goes. Ashley, anyways, we'll let you get back to whatever you got going on the rest of your night there in Berea. Hopefully you get to make all it right. home. But we appreciate you coming on. Again, you can catch Ashley over at Cleveland.com and then catch the Orange and Brown Talk podcast that Ashley does. It's good stuff. So make sure you tune in there. Ashley, we appreciate you coming on. Thanks for joining us and being a friend of the show.
Of course. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ashley.
See you later.
See you tomorrow.
Yes.
Short day. Then big thanks again to Ashley Bastock. That was a lot of fun. Good perspective and good stories there, especially at the end there with Joel Bitonio and him obviously retiring with the Browns. All right, Fred, I've got a couple things, other things I wanted to go over. And if you've got other things that, well, maybe we'll just start with this, Fred. During camp and OTAs and now this mandatory mini camp, what aren't we talking about yet that you've noticed out there, you know, with quarterbacks taking so much and really wide receivers taking so much of it and how the defense is going to be? What stuff aren't we talking about? What have you noticed out there that you think, hey, that's pretty interesting what I'm seeing?
Well, I do think the biggest fans are going to see the biggest improvement is wide receivers. I'm really impressed with Denzel Boston, Casey Concepcion, and Isaiah Bond has come on. I think he's the kind of a forgotten guy out there. I think they're all going to make Jerry Jeudy better and push him, you know, even the more. And so besides that, obviously without the pads, we haven't seen Harold Fannin recently, but I'm a little concerned behind Harold Fannin, and you got a lot of young guys that,
yeah,
you know, that you haven't heard much about. And that's the biggest negative overall, I would say, is depth, you know, on defense. Like we've said, we haven't really seen Denzel Ward. We've seen some of Tyson Campbell, but behind them, I think that, you know, right off the top, she mentioned Carson Schlesinger. I think he's going to just, as good as he was last year, I think he's going to bloom this year even the more, because he is very serious about this. He's not resting on his laurels. He's playing like a guy that's afraid he's going to get cut. And I like that. That's the same type of mentality he brought when I saw him last year. He acts like nothing's guaranteed to me. It doesn't matter, you know, he's just that type of a kid, and I appreciate that. But as far as stories we're not talking about, I think we're talking about most the things that have been at the forefront. I've seen they just started having the kicker, Andre Smith, kick a little bit, and I saw him make a 57-yard field goal, you know, on an end-of-game drive. I think he – you know, after the beginning of last year when he cost him that first game, he settled down. He was kind of an untold story. And I think he's now a lot more confident, you know, and he's kicking the ball well. Obviously, they haven't got into games and so forth. But the offensive line, they're rotating guys. They had, you know, Munkin announced the four starters, Fano, Zion Johnson, Titus Howard, and Elton Jenkins. The question with Elton Jenkins, where's he going to play? He's been at center like every day. They did put Parker Brailsford in with the first team for a little bit, but mostly it's been Jenkins. But at right guard is where they've been rotating. They had last week Jack Conley at right guard with the first team. Yesterday they had KT Leviston, a tackle, yep, was playing right guard yesterday. Today they had Tevin Jenkins at right guard, and they put DeJuan Jones out at left tackle a little bit. replacing Fano. So Miller Barber or Austin Barber was at right tackle with the second team. So you're starting to see some of these battles. I think you've got three or four guys battling at right guard. I think Barber might even be thrown into that mix along with Leviston, Tevin Jenkins, Jack Conley. I haven't heard or seen much of Zach Zinner. But if Brailsford shows enough to be the starter at center, they'll kick Elton Jenkins out to right guard. Luke Whipler just started practicing like yesterday, and you would have thought he would be in the mix, like Whipler, Brailsford, and the best one of them would go against, see if they were better around. So I like the way they're mixing around, trying to find. So the offensive line looks like there's a lot more depth than there was. When you're talking about DeJuan Jones, who was a sure shot starter last year without even having competition for him, he's now battling to get to be the third tackle.
So yeah,
I think the depth there's good. Wide receiver's good. Little concerned about tight end. And she said running back. I got the vibe in talking to some people in the front office that they're okay with all these young running backs. They don't really feel they need a veteran. So you got all these young guys in their second year, Raheem Sanders and Dylan Sampson and Quinshon Judkins. And then behind them, you know, our undrafted free agents and Amani Marshall and so forth. So it seems like they're willing to take the chance that Judkins will be healthy. But last year when he got hurt, they struggled and they went to the waiver wire and brought in like Trayvon or Travion Williams or, you know, guys like that. So I think that's where they're going. I think that's why Quinshon's getting so much work right now. They don't seem to be holding him back. He looks good. And I think as he goes, that running game can go. But I think really the biggest thing is on the defense, you know, is the depth and so forth. And we've seen some of the things, but
it's funny because it feels like depth is, it feels like the offensive side of the ball is the concern because you don't know who your quarterback is going to be. But depth-wise, outside of tight end, feel pretty darn good, kind of all over the place, right? Even at
by the all the positions,
yeah. We talk about the depth at offensive line last year versus this year. It is night and day with what they have done. Like you said, there are guys that were pretty comfortable either being a starter last year or being a primary backup. Some of those guys that were primary backup guys last year shouldn't be comfortable making the team this year, and so the depth feels like it's improved kind of everywhere, but the concern, obviously, quarterback offensively. Defensively, that's where the depth gets scary because you lose Denzel Ward, what are we going to turn to? You lose, you know, even at the linebacker position, you lose a guy like Quincy Williams, what are you going to turn to? You, God forbid, one of your defensive ends, you know, has to miss some time. What are you going to turn to? It does not feel like there's a ton of depth on the defensive side of things.
Well, that's what when they signed Epinesa as the fourth defensive end, a guy with 6-7 sacks, you felt, okay, that's pretty good for the fourth.
Right.
Now you didn't have him and you lost Miles. You swapped him for Verse. So, yeah, you feel like, okay, you're relying on undrafted guys or Aiden Huntington to really step up this year. It'll be interesting in this dead period after the mini camp tomorrow. If they get together and evaluate, okay, they have a short list of 30-something guys, whether it be a defensive end or whatever. This is where the Shelby Harris's came in. This is where Maurice Hurst came in. It's where Malcolm Smith, the linebacker, came in. They evaluate, do they want to go to training camp with this group? Or do they want to get to training camp and see how it starts? Or do they go get somebody now at cornerback? See, I thought Emerson would be great to bring back to have three starter types. They didn't feel that way, and he moved on. You feel really, you know, like you said, we know Denzel's going to miss games. He does every year. Him and Tyson Campbell behind that, name me somebody you really feel good about. I mean, you got Ross and Trey Avery and Miles Bryant, but you would think you might want to look at somebody at that position. Feel a little better at safety with Emmanuel McNeil Warren. I get the idea and I feel that he's going to be like a starter. I think we had a guy on in the film thing, but I do think they're going to run more three safeties, two linebackers.
Yep.
And that's why they're not so concerned about why they weren't so concerned about Diabate leaving. He was a starter, but he was the third linebacker. So I just think that the depth is always an issue.
I also think running that those three safeties, you know, Emmanuel McNeil Warren, I think projects pretty well to, you know, if they need him as like a nickel corner, you know, if somebody to cover somebody in the slot, McNeil Warren projects pretty well there too. So I think they've added versatility, but the depth obviously is still a question. I will go back to this question in the comments because I think it's a good one. And yes, it's going to drag us back to quarterback, but I think this is a valuable one to talk about. E. Gillen in the comments said that Pete said Gabriel is finding a groove this week. Don't read too much into that. That's not Pete saying Gabriel's going to be the starter. Don't. E. Gillen's question is, I know he seems to be forgotten, but Fred, do you think he's still an option to make the team?
I do, because he's a third-round pick. That's an asset. They're not going to give him away. They're not going to cut him. I see a viable path of him being traded if it really is going to come down to what they think about Talen Green. If they feel with their hands on him, this is a guy that has a future potential on this team to be a contributor. And I don't just mean totally a gadget guy. I mean, with 4.3 speed, 6.6, 230, you can't coach that. And so I do think that's where the numbers comes in. Andrew Berry, we know, would love in a perfect world to only have two quarterbacks. It burned him early on when he traded his backup and thought he could just get by with DTR as the backup, and that failed miserably. And so now going through four or five quarterbacks a year, I think he's pretty set on you got to have three on the roster. But I don't know if you could get Talen Green to the practice squad, especially as I predict in the preseason, he's going to be Browns camp MVP, because you put 4.3 speed out there against some of these 85th to the 90th guys on the roster that are not even going to make teams, you know, this year. I think he's going to show up really well, even if he doesn't throw great. And I don't know if you're going to be able to get him to a practice squad. So that's what I see it coming down to. I saw Gabriel in his limited time, you know, made a nice throw yesterday. I had a video of it, deep ball. And, you know, he's just putting his head down and trying to do his job. He's not getting a lot of reps, but, you know, that's the role of a third quarterback. And he's really going to have to show that he deserves to be on the roster, and I think he'll get some time to play, because if they can find a place and they can swap him for a draft pick to keep Green, that would be what I would say. You know, they gave his number away. He was number 8 and they gave it to Jared Verse. And so he's wearing number 6 now.
Well, he gave
and
it.
That was JOK's number
to Jared Verse.
Yeah. But I'm saying, you know, I don't know why he couldn't have kept wearing number 8. I mean, just like in college, they play with the same. But in the NFL, I've seen for years in training camp on the roster, 35 black, brown, 35 white. I don't know.
I think they just wanted to get that out of the way, though.
So anyway, yeah, I think that Andrew Berry picked him in the third round. We know what he's done with third round picks. Anthony Schwartz, he kept way longer than he should. You know, Siaka Ika, kind of the same thing, wasn't a fit. So I think Gabriel's going to give every opportunity. He's on a very inexpensive contract, and he could be appealing to you know, a team that's looking for a quarterback or has an injury as a backup, or a guy like Kevin Stefanski, who has a lot of left-handed quarterbacks down there with Michael Penix, Tua, and, you know, add Gabriel to the mix. Plus, I think one of the reasons he was in Cleveland, I think Kevin liked him.
Allow me to just flip the script on a couple of things. The team came out flat out and said they drafted Taylen Green because of traits. And because once you get to a certain point in the draft, you just look at traits and go, wow, that guy's got traits. I think people need to really slow down. I watched a lot of Taylen Green. You'll see a lot. I know he's not really even – they're kind of working with him on the side from what I've heard in camp at this point.
Yeah, he gets no reps.
There's a reason. And listen, this is not a Taylen Green hate fest. I hope they can put the quarterback – that would fit those traits out on the field and make him into that. But there's a reason he fell to the point where he did, even though he's big and tall and fast and he has a rocket for an arm. There's a reason he, with all those traits, got drafted where he is. And it's because playing quarterback, he's got a lot of work to do. He is very developmental, extremely developmental. He is a long, long shot. So with that in mind, do I think they might try to get him to the practice squad? Yeah. And do I think they'll probably be successful in doing that? Yeah. Teams weren't lined up to draft him. They're not going to be lined up. I mean, maybe if he blows everybody out of the water in training camp and in preseason games, then maybe you would not want to do that. But otherwise, I think Taylen Green has got a real shot to get to the practice squad. And then, I get in arguments with people online about this. Dylan Gabriel is kind of exactly what you want as your third string quarterback. He's in his second year, but he has starting experience already. So he knows what it's like to play NFL games as a young player. There's no noise that's going to come from around him. It's not like people are going to be clamoring or whatever. He's just your third string guy that is going to learn the playbook. He's a veteran in terms of the fact that he played so long in college that he brings a little bit of an older mentality to the game. And do I think he's the obvious trade candidate? Yes, of course. If a team sustains an injury or something and they're looking for a guy to provide depth in their quarterback room, I think Dylan Gabriel will absolutely be the guy that they will be looking for. So I don't know. I'm kind of 50-50 whether he's on the team at the start of the year, but I don't think it's because they're going to decide, oh, we're going with Taylen Green. I just think people really need to slow down on the expectations of what that's going to be.
Yeah, if they look at him overall and just feel at the end of training camp, you know, we're in better hands with Dylan Gabriel as a third quarterback, because we know how many quarterbacks go down here. Deshaun Watson's history has been injury prone. And do you want Taylen Green to be, you know, one snap away from being on the field as a rookie? So you got to think of that too. And so I agree, you know, that really could happen, you know, that if he does nothing special, really doesn't, you know, they really could put him on the practice squad. And I know you can work out deals, you know, and say, hey, we'll give you a little extra money, you know, to stay with us type of a thing. So.
Yeah, we'll see. And it's also a great point. I mean, if you're going to roll in with Shedeur Sanders and Deshaun Watson as your one and two in whatever order, that number three person better stay ready, because you know Deshaun's injury history. And maybe this is the last thing I'll ask you, Fred, just about camp. And I know we're talking a lot about quarterbacks, but I want to go to Shedeur for a minute. Are there any market areas that you're seeing? Like, are there any areas you're seeing market improvements in Shedeur's game? Because I think he's always thrown a good ball. He's got a great release. I think one of the best traits about Shedeur Sanders, I don't think people talk about it enough, is that catchable ball thing. It feels like a cliche when you say it, but we've seen some guys come in here that throw terribly uncatchable balls. Brandon Weeden comes to mind. Baker Mayfield early threw a really tough ball to catch. There wasn't a lot of touch to it. I think Shedeur has phenomenal touch. He's accurate. He's got all that stuff, but he holds on to the ball a lot. And I've seen a few videos come out from camp of him dropping back and delivering a really good ball after he held onto it for like 3 or 4 seconds. And I'm thinking, uh-oh, like that is probably not going to be that ball in, you know, in the regular season. So where have you noticed any improvements of him like understanding. I know it's early. I know it's not a full pass rush and all that, but this is the time you got to practice in your head. Get that ball out early.
And I'll say this, you know, to not just you, but fans that saw clips, we asked Todd Monken about that. And he said there was sessions that were asking the quarterbacks to hang on to the ball 5-6 seconds. So we get into a scramble situation, kind of like, because that happens 5-6 times a game. So yep. Some people, you know, we can't differentiate. We just video it and put it out there and people go, man, he would have been sacked 3 times. Well, that was on purpose for that session. And so, but to answer your question, I'm not a guru on footwork, but they have said his footwork's better. He does look quicker in getting rid of the ball and making a decision. All the way around, he's always had the touch. If he can throw it, it's been, can you make the read and get it out before you get sacked? And I do think that he's come a long way. It's so hard without tackling and live bullets, so to say, to evaluate either quarterback, you know? And so I can see why Monken is having a tough time, because they all look pretty good. Like Deshaun Watson looked good to me, you know, in training camp, you know, for a couple years, and then he played terrible in the game. Maybe it was his shoulder the last year, but as far as Sanders, I think he's doing everything right. He talks in parables. He spoke after practice today. That's the biggest, the difference. And this is a picky thing, but he doesn't sound like a NFL quarterback. I mean, he's always kind of talking about different things, you know, but that's okay if he can play. So I think that it'll be very interesting how this plays out. You would surely think anywhere close you'd go with the young guy, because as we've said, and this shouldn't determine it, but Deshaun Watson is really going to be put in a hard place if he's the first time he throws an incomplete pass. I think it might help that they're starting out, you know, on the road down in Jacksonville if he ends up being the starter. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't expect anything tomorrow. I think that Monken's already preempted by saying that he wasn't ready to name a starter.
Yeah.
So we'll talking listen. About it all summer.
He's not a guru when it comes to footwork, but you know what he is a guru on? Fred Greatham is a guru on putting on a hell of a show on Wednesday nights here on the OBR streaming network, just like the one we had here. All right. That's going to do it, Fred, here for Inside the Browns Beat. Last order of business for us. Well, hold on. Not last order of business. First of all, go get yourself a little rest. Grab a snack. Eat some dinner. Whatever. Grab some beers. Come back at 9 o'clock. Garage beers. We will be live. We've got a good special guest tonight, as we'll be talking to Nick Shook, Northeast Ohio native. I think he's back in Northeast Ohio now, but NFL.com writer. We're going to talk to him about the Browns offseason as well, get his opinion on things. He wrote an article on the winners and losers of the Garrett trade. So we'll dive in more to both the Browns and the NFL offseason, which there's been a lot of interesting things that have happened. So we'll talk all that with Nick Shook on Garage Beers at 9 o'clock. Plus, we'll talk about the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Finals. You know, we'll get into all of it. We're going to get into all of it on Garage Beers. So come right back at 9 o'clock for Garage Beers. But now we'll get into our last order of business, and that is our thank yous. First thank you goes out to our special guest, Ashley Bastock from Cleveland.com, the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Ashley was great. Great insight from her as she is all of a sudden turning into a solid seasoned veteran there in the Browns beat room. And so we really appreciate Ashley taking some time from Berea to talk with us. Again, make sure you're following Ashley online at Ashley Bastock 42 for her Browns coverage. Thank you to the OBR for hosting us. Get over to the OBR.com, hit subscribe. The Orange and Brown Report is the oldest and largest independent Browns coverage site in Cleveland. So make sure you get over there and you hit subscribe for all the best Browns coverage. And our last thank you and our biggest thank you goes out to all of you. If you were live here tonight, good comments, good questions. If we could get to your questions, we appreciate you throwing them in there. If we didn't get to them, keep coming every Wednesday. Bring your questions. We'll get to as many of them as possible as we roll into kind of a dark period of the Browns off season for about a month, a little over a month before we get to real training camp, and then things really take off. So get your rest in before that happens. That's going to do it for this episode of Inside the Browns Beat, the 40th episode of Inside the Browns Beat. And we will be back with you again. In the meantime, he is Fred Greatham. I am Michael Keefe. We appreciate you. We love you. And we'll talk to you down the line. Until then, as always, go Browns.
Thank you.